Mary Curran Hackett is in the studio tonight. She's one of our fine Cincinnati authors and one of Amazon's top 100 authors. She joined us previously for her debut novel, Proof of Heaven. She's back to talk about her current novel, which is titled Proof of Angels. Mary, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Barbara.
Good to see you. You have brought along a character from your first novel into this one. Mm-hmm. His name is Sean McGee. So give us some background on him. What was his childhood experience, his relationship with his sister and nephew? What demons is he fighting?
Sean's one of my favorite characters from Proof of Heaven. He is the child of a Irish immigrant and a firefighter. He lost both of his parents prematurely, so he's kind of an adult orphan. And he and his sister are thrust into quite a drama with his nephew. Colm is very ill, gravely ill. And he comes in as kind of the foster father and has to help navigate his nephew's health and cure and finding some sort of hope for him and his mother throughout that process. And Sean is a somewhat damaged character, dark character. He drinks a lot. And so throughout Proof of Heaven, he battles his own addictions, his own problems while he's trying to help his sister and his nephew. And we leave him at Proof of Heaven. He's kind of turned a corner. We think he's going to be okay and everything's going to go well for him in life. We think things have clicked, but we find in Proof of Angels 3 years later that just because someone has had an epiphany or has had a moment where of clarity and they think things are going to work out, their job is not done. Their life still goes on. And that's what we're faced with in Proof of Angels.
There are just always more lessons, aren't there?
Yes.
Proof of Angels opens with a very dramatic scene, a terrifying one. Actually, Sean is in a terrifying situation. So read the first couple of paragraphs, if you would, please.
Sure. Sean McGee was on fire. The flames licked his neck and then disappeared over his fire retardant jacket as he crawled on all fours, trying desperately to find his way out. He was staying below the dense black smoke, but it was already impossible for him to see. As he moved across the large, seemingly endless space, he could feel the heat radiating up through the floorboards, and he could tell the entire room would consume him if he didn't escape in the next minute, possibly seconds. Breathe, breathe, breathe. That's all he wanted to do, even though he knew the mask and the oxygen it was pumping to him was the only thing keeping him alive at this moment. He nevertheless had the desire to rip it off and inhale deeply. It defied logic. He knew this, but he couldn't help but feel that the mask wasn't working, that he was suffocating. If he had given in to this particular primal urge, as he had given in to so many urges in his life, he would die. One inhalation and his lungs would become filled with the deadly smoke and would knock him out. He knew the heavy tank on his back and the mask that it was attached to was the only thing saving him now. But even the oxygen in the tank was dissipating.
Fortunately, he does survive. And he, as many of us think we would do or have done, make a lot of promises in this terrifying moment. So what does he pledge to do if he survives? And who does that involve?
He promises to be a better man and to make amends with people that he had lost touch with. Most importantly, a woman called Chiara Montanari, an Italian woman that he had had a relationship with in his youth and that he had left behind. And so it becomes sort of another quest for him, a search for another person and also purpose in his life, that his life has some sort of meaning. Out of all of this horrible tragedy, something good might come of this. And that's essentially what he hopes to do.
He, of course, has quite an involved and prolonged recovery.
He does.
Because he was seriously hurt mm-hmm. in this fire. He has some wonderful friends along the way, folks who are supportive but also honest with him. So introduce us to that cast of characters, if you would.
Well, Dr. Basu makes a reappearance, his brother-in-law from Proof of Heaven, who's a doctor, who comes and gives him basically the foundation he needs to get better and the medical advice he needs, as well as some emotional, spiritual insights as well, because the two have a very special relationship. Then his best friend, James, is one of, I feel like, both comedic characters, but really deep, just a genuine human being who really, one of those people who you have in your life who always wants the best for you, just wants you to do well, is rooting for you. And that's what he has in James. And then another female comes into the mix, Libby, and people wonder about her relationship and how that might affect his quest for Kiara. She happens to be a dog trainer. Then there's his dog chief. And so all of them together go on this journey of healing with him. But as much as they are helping Sean to heal, he is also helping them because, like all human beings, all of us are dealing with our own tragic past or tragic presence or uncertain futures. So all of them together kind of working this out. Oh, and there's Tom, the nurse slash physical trainer, who's somewhat of the doubting Thomas literally throughout it all.
James happens to be a firefighter also, mm-hmm. So they have that in common. Libby has an interesting backstory.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about that.
Libby is a heroin addict, and Sean recognizes her right away as being a fellow addict. Sean dabbled in drugs and alcohol, but he recognizes right away that is what Libby had an addiction with or is, unbeknownst to anybody, currently fighting. She also is coming from a tragic past that is uncovered and revealed through the process of the story as well. And it kind of defines who she is, why she is the way she is. It kind of helps put a face to an addiction that's growing across the country, and it's affecting all kinds of families, all kinds of lives, and that no one's immune to it. Even an upper class, you know, San Francisco socialite would end up being addicted to heroin. So,
well, and another commonality in your book, I think, is the theme of loss. So sometimes it's the actual loss of a person, but it can be the loss of a relationship. Those things that we all experience in our life.
True.
Calm, in your first novel, who is Sean's nephew, you have had your own dramatic health problems, mm-hmm. with literally heart-stopping condition, mm-hmm. and also more recently talked about your challenges with depression. Mm-hmm. So these life experiences obviously have impacted your writing. They're included in ways, mm-hmm. in your writing. But I'm wondering about the reverse. So, for instance, I have a friend who says that writing is her spiritual practice. And I'm wondering if writing is a way of processing, healing for you in your life, or is it quite separate from that?
I try to look at it as a craft and as art, and not, I do cathartic writing. I write in a journal, or I write letters that are never sent, and that's cathartic, getting things out on the page. But when I am writing a story or a novel, and I may be channeling things that have happened in the past, I'm not doing it to heal myself. That may be a byproduct down the road, but in the process, it's actually quite painful. It's kind of like picking at a scab and reopening it and reopening it. So I don't recommend it actually as a process. If you want to go heal, let's talk about this thing or really dig at something. I don't. I think that there's medical professionals who can handle that, and I think there's medication that you might need. Writing is not my medicine. It is more of a practice and an art, and I consider it work. So I do that, and I do kind of keep it separate. But I definitely, everything I've experienced in my life informs my characters and informs how they behave, how they react, what they do, all of that.
And have you had your own proof of angels experience?
I think about it all the time. I have not seen an angel with wings or any of that, but I definitely tend to be on the side of that there are angels all among us every day. There have been so many experiences in my life where someone's tapped me and moved me in a direction, and it's changed the trajectory of my entire life. And we have all these moments where people kind of whisk in. You don't know why they're there. You don't know why you're having this experience. You know it some way will lead to something else, but you, at the moment, you don't know until they're gone. And I feel like those are kind of like those moments where it's like there are people among us for whatever reason that are beyond us. So for sure.
It sounds like you have the wisdom to listen. So that's a wonderful thing in life. I want to thank you so much for visiting with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll look forward to having you back. I've been talking with Mary Curran Hackett about her latest novel, which is titled Proof of Angels. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.